This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Orion, are you there?
Yes, there he is. Ready to check in, but I'm still trying to figure out 6 inches of snow.
Yeah, could be.
Yeah.
And again, right. I read Tom Skilling's weather reports yesterday, and he's looking at about 5 different models from different parts of the country, and they're still not quite sure yet where and how much. But
okay.
But that's the general amount.
Well, I'll keep my fingers crossed that it's on the low side rather than the high side.
Sounds good.
Thank you very much, Roger. And as we say every week at this time, welcome to the Saturday morning show. And thanks to our technology today, you can hear us anywhere in the world. I was sitting here thinking about technology because when I joined WGN in 1960, for you kids out there, the announcement was made at an outdoor farm show in central Illinois. That's where the station wanted to introduce me as the new farm director of WGN Radio. And we did our broadcast from the farm in central Illinois. It took a truckload of equipment, took 3 engineers. Now I can hold in my hand a gadget, plug a computer into one end, and plug a microphone into the other end. And it sounds like I'm sitting in the studio in Chicago. That's the one of the changes we've seen, of course. You've seen them as well, and in agriculture, we have certainly seen the changes. And again, this year, I think we pretty well parked all of the combines by Thanksgiving Day, which tends to be the desire of farmers to have harvest completed and the combine parked in the shed and be all done by Thanksgiving Day. And when you take a look at the number of acres in corn and soybean production that are harvested, it's well over 90%. So I hope you all had a very happy Thanksgiving, as we did here in the desert. But, you know, interestingly enough, as I listened to Roger giving the weather information, our temperatures this morning are not far apart. We're 50 degrees in Scottsdale, Arizona. But the big difference is no snow in the forecast and a clear blue desert sky. Well, we have a lot to talk about this morning. We continue to talk about trade in agriculture, and that continues to be probably the number one topic that farmers are talking about. Land prices, yeah, they always talk about land prices, but right now we're talking market prices. And we're talking about what they mean to corn and soybean producers here in the country. As I turned on my machines this morning, I did see one positive note that I'll share with you at the top of the show. The headline says, Egypt buys 240,000 tons of U.S., Russian, Romanian wheat. And let me break that down. Country of Egypt bought 120,000 tons of U.S. wheat, 60,000 tons of Russian wheat, and 60,000 tons of Romanian wheat. So that's encouraging news for the wheat producers here in this country, because it's a competitive world out there right now when it comes to wheat production. Russia, the biggest producer of wheat in the world and the biggest exporter of wheat. So it's good to see that Egypt did buy 100,000 tons or 120,000 tons of wheat from America. Corn producers, while they're happy with the yield, are very concerned about what's going on in the trade world for corn and other crops from the United States. So we're going to talk to the president of the National Corn Growers Association, and that comes up when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. Producers here in the United States are still reacting to some of the things that have happened this summer in the trade situation with major concern. One of them is the president of the National Corn Growers Association, Lynn Crisp of Nebraska. And Lynn joins us on the line this morning. You wrote a letter to Secretary of Agriculture Perdue. Can you give me some of the highlights of that letter, Lynn?
We were communicating with the secretary, just letting him know that our producer members of the National Corn Growers Association are still in a situation where we're extremely disappointed over the announcement of the 1 cent for corn allocation on the market facilitation program. As producers are wrapping up harvest here then and taking an assessment of the general farm economy, which is not good, then they are still shaking their heads at the 1 cent declaration for that payment.
So you need that to be higher than one penny, is that what you're saying? And we're talking about, well, we put initials on everything, MFP, which is the Market Facilitation Program. And if we have a second round of payments, you want to see more than a penny for corn.
Yeah, USDA was making that payment in two tranches, and so the half cent then was the advance, and there will be another one potentially here announced in December for the second half cent. But the National Corn Growers Association had commissioned a study as to what the amount of the trade disruptions actually meant to the market, and that calculation came back at 44 cents, which is a whole lot more believable in the whole situation, given what kind of reaction that we have seen in the market through the summertime and this fall, when that announcement of the trade tariffs was actually making a full impact on the market. And it's a situation that there's always a delay in the actual business and how the business of exports and trade around the world impacts the markets, then depending upon how robust that trade is or the lack thereof. But markets react instantaneously to the news, and in this case, significantly negative news. And we felt it here in farm country, and it was not a penny.
So talk to me about adding ethanol and distillers' dried grains to the calculation. That has not been done?
Well, it was our understanding in our conversations with folks there at USDA and just inquiring as to how they came up with the penny was in whole kernel corn exports to China, and that was a fairly narrow view of what was going on in true market impacts. But if they choose to just look at China as they said that they did, then there is a whole lot more to our trade impacts and the markets than just the whole kernel corn. And yes, DDGs and ethanol, which plays a very important role in how markets react in trading corn, was a large component of that. And even at that, that impact was in like the $240 million range and was not accounted for.
China has been a big market for the DDGs, has it not? They've been taking quite a bit of that product.
Yeah, it was. That is something that the Grains Council has been working on a significant basis, trying to build markets around the world for DDGs and ethanol as well. But DDG was seen to be a significant premium product into the China market and was another outlet for our corn.
So a lot of weather damage around the country this this summer and fall. Is there damage to the corn or soybean crop that you also want to take into consideration?
Well, that was the other point. There was 2 points that we tried making in the communication to the secretary. And the other one, as you mentioned here, is the payments were based on this year's production, and there are significant areas in the country that experienced weather that was too wet, weather that was too dry, hurricanes in the south, and so basing those payments on this year's production was putting a significant number of the producers and our members at a disadvantage, and we were wanting to communicate that as well, and we believe that a more equitable position would have been to look at RMA crop records rather than the actual physical production for 2018.
So, Lynn, let's talk a little bit about your farm. You're located where?
The farm is in south central Nebraska in irrigated country. There's predominantly pivot irrigation here. We sit on top of a good quality aquifer, and so it's a high productivity area.
Did you get your combine parked by Thanksgiving Day? Because I know a lot of farmers have that as a goal. Did it happen to you?
Yes, we were completed with harvest a little more than a week ahead of Thanksgiving, which added to another one of those things that when we were offering Thanksgiving prayers around the table, that we could truthfully be thankful that harvest was done. But we hit it awfully hard during the harvest season, even though that we did have a couple of weather delays. Our stock quality in our corn was not the very best, and so we saw some issues early on and went after the corn to try to get it before it went down, which for the most part we were able to do. Had an extremely good crop this year, as some people around the country have said that they were experiencing good crops too. We set a record in corn production on our farm. Our soybeans were about average, but that was because we had a wetter than usual area experience here in south central Nebraska. And here, when we get higher than normal moisture, we get days that tend to be cloudier as well, and that definitely affected the soybean production. But it was a good crop. It just wasn't on the record side like corn was.
Well, Lynn, we thank you for your time. I know you're on the road in Nebraska, but thank you for taking time to visit with us here. And I hope that we get some of this trade situation ironed out so that you can. Oh, and the other thing I think we need is to get that NAFTA agreement signed off before the end of the year so we don't have to go through that. And I know the corn growers will be active in Washington as you are in Nebraska. A visit with Lynn Crisp, who is the president of the National Corn Growers Association. It's 25 minutes after 5 o'clock here on the Saturday morning show. An event that has been going a few years and is now an annual event is coming up next week. And let me talk about it for a moment. the Farm Progress Tech Forum Conference. It'll be held November 27 and 28 at the Coralville Marriott Conference Center. That's in Coralville, Iowa. It'll help farmers and certified crop advisors make better decisions on every acre they farm. So you may want to check in on that. If you want more information, farmprogresstechforum.com. Capital F Farm, capital P Progress, capital T Tech, capital F Forum.com for more information on this event. Max Armstrong, I know, has attended this event in the past. Haven't checked in with Max to see if he's going to be there next week, but it does attract a lot of people. It's running a day and a half designed to update your specific precision farm skill set with the latest, most critical techniques and strategies. And people attending will learn from industry techs, recognized university specialists, a variety of agronomists, national ag tech investment leaders, and top performing farmers and advisors. That's coming up Coralville, Iowa, next week on the 27th and the 28th on Tuesday and Wednesday for this event that has become an annual event. The other thing, we're into that time between Thanksgiving and Christmas when a lot of State Farm bureaus hold their annual meeting. And so between now and Christmas, I'm sure that a lot of farm bureaus will be holding state conventions, and we'll run over that list early next week, the locations and the dates for Farm Bureau in Illinois, Wisconsin, Iowa, Indiana, Michigan. We'll check them all. And then let me remind you that there's a survey coming up that is important, and I do hope you will participate. The Department of Agriculture Agency will be contacting farmers to gather year-end production and storage figures. The National Agricultural Statistics Service also will survey grain facility operators for information on off-farm storage. The survey will check with grain facility operators, and the service's Northern Plains director is Dean Groskirth, and he says survey results are used in calculating county-level yields that have a direct impact on farmers. The USDA's Farm Service Agency uses the data in administering programs such as the Agricultural Risk Coverage and in Disaster Assistance Program calculations. Survey results will be published in several reports, including the Crop Production Annual Summary and the Quarterly Grain Stocks Report. Both of those will be released on January 11th. But if you're an agricultural producer, I hope you'll fill out the survey questions because it does have a direct impact on the assistance programs to farmers across the country. And it is kept confidential. The information coming from individual farms is put all together. And so the information farm by farm is kept private. It does not get into other hands, but it does help the U.S. Department of Agriculture to determine the subsidy payments that are involved in the farm program. Well, we have come to the halfway mark here on the Saturday Morning Show. Thank you for inviting us into your car, your home, your life. Thank you, Roger, and good morning again. If you've just joined us here on the Saturday Morning Show, Max Armstrong will be joining us shortly to talk livestock futures trade with Dennis Smith of Archer Financial Services, because it's not just corn and soybeans that are having some interesting activities from a price standpoint, certainly happening to livestock and to hogs and to cattle. So Max will get into that with Dennis Smith in just a few minutes here on the Saturday Morning Show. But right now, at 25 minutes before 6 o'clock, it's time for Samuelson Says, brought to you by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. I am Orion, and this week, talking about getting farmers connected to technology. The folks at Wink Products Company want to help make your life easier with a family of professional strength cleaning products, products that really work. Wink Rust Stain Remover is the number one liquid rust stain remover in the country. This professional strength formula dissolves those ugly rust stains on white sinks and toilet bowls, color fast fabrics and carpets. This little brown bottle has been around for 71 years and it's still number one. To learn more about the full line of Wink products, check us out at WHINK.com. Well, it's something that we've been talking about, but those of you who are old enough or mature enough, I don't use the word old, I use the word mature, and some of you are mature enough, like me, to remember waiting on our farms for the REA, Rural Electrification Administration, to connect us to electricity. This was a major challenge back in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, but they finally got the job done. But now there may be another challenge of a different nature, but that is just as important, and that is the lack of e-connectivity broadband reception in rural areas. A 2018 report by the Federal Communications Commission indicated that 80% of the 24 million American households who lack reliable, affordable, high-speed internet are in rural communities. And Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue says we have to do something about that situation. And so he recently said USDA will invest $91 million in an effort that will benefit more than 27,000 businesses and homes in a dozen states. Now, hopefully, that will go far beyond homes and businesses, because I'm thinking of grade and high school students who don't have access, and that puts them behind students in the city when it comes to acquiring jobs. I grew up in a one-room country school where we had chalk and blackboards, and I hope that they have become part of history. An assistant to the Secretary for Rural Development, Ann Haslett, said, and I'm quoting now, "In the modern economy, rural broadband is a lifeline to quality of life and economic opportunity. With that impact, USDA is fiercely committed, under the leadership of Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue, on expanding access to e-connectivity in rural America, and I thank the Secretary for the initial $91 million grant. I know it will take more than that, and it will take more time to bring that modern tool of technology to rural high schools and grade schools, as well as farms and ranches. So my challenge to the Secretary is to keep on keeping on and get the job done." My thoughts on Samuelson Says, a presentation of Tribune Radio Networks. 20 minutes before 6 o'clock, Max Armstrong and Dennis Smith will be back to talk markets when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show.
The livestock and meat situation in the spotlight here as we visit with Dennis Smith from Archer Financial Services. We want to talk about that African swine fever hog situation in a moment, but as far as the cattle industry concerned, I noticed the other day, I think you reported, the exports are very strong for our beef right now. That's not at all unfriendly, is it?
Boy, it's been impressively strong beef exports. I think for the year to date, we're up almost 10%. That's just an unheard of level of exports for a change from year to year. And so the beef market's really enjoying that. It's a good general increase, not just two or three players, a general increase in all of our beef customers. And it has a lot to do with the global economy.
Why is the beef situation not being roughed up by the trade war?
Well, we just haven't seen slapped on tariffs. Now, there is a tariff on beef with China, but we don't really ship a lot of beef to China. That market was just starting to open up when the tariffs hit. So they're not one of our big clients. And so we are seeing the beef market pretty well undisrupted to date anyway from the trade wars.
What are the various destinations for our beef going into export channels?
Well, we still use Mexico, Japan, South Korea. So those are your big three export customers. And then there's a whole string of smaller countries that are good quality export customers.
How's the domestic situation looking for beef now?
Well, Max, we are looking and we are monitoring this. There seems to be a change in consumer preferences, and this is extremely important if it is happening. With the economy, with unemployment so low, we are seeing a consumer preference shifting away from poultry and toward red meat again. And this is contrary to the long-term trend, just the opposite. And this is really important if this is actually happening.
Per capita consumption had been quite strong in poultry for some time, hadn't it?
Yeah, this has been a long-term trend of the millennials, you might say. So if this is reversing course, you know, we still consume 88% of our beef domestically, export about 11%. This is really a big deal if it continues.
Where is that happening? Is that through retail or is it food service? Where are we seeing this?
I think it's mostly in the retail sector. It's mostly in consumer attitudes toward being really confident toward the economy and the preferences toward the more expensive meats and away from the cheaper proteins.
When did you start to pick up on this? When did this start to show up, Dennis?
We saw a report in Reuters published about 30 days ago. They were the first ones to sort of report on the trends. So now we are, watching it closely and monitoring that to try and get a handle on, is this really happening?
Is our supply pretty much in check with demand at this moment as far as beef is concerned?
Well, it's a challenge because it's record large production. So we are really pushing beef into the pipeline. So you don't want a hitch. You don't want any sort of hiccup in demand, or it'll upend everything. So it is record large production and expected to be record large production again next year.
How critical will the winter weather be as we look at that season ahead with the winter closing in fairly soon here?
Max, it looks like it's going to be a tough winter for feeding cattle. We've started out with pretty muddy feedlot conditions, and we're seeing, I think, real cold weather earlier than normal. If there's a lot of moisture involved, it's going to be, we believe, a very tough winter for feeding cattle.
Does that tend to bottle up the marketings then?
It could slow the marketings, and we need to keep cattle moving. That's sort of a problem right now, especially in the northern Nebraska, Iowa area. Weights are not a problem because the feedlots are such sloppy, big mess that conversion, feed conversion, and performance has not been what it should be. But the numbers are there, and we really need to move the numbers.
Let's switch over to talk about pork. Let's talk about China. What's your best assessment of what has happened there thus far, and do we still have this void of information knowing what is actually taking place with the African swine fever in that hog herd?
Yeah, Max, I think the void of information is always going to be there, so we're sort of going to have to feel our way through this situation. And one way we will feel that is when we see export business show up. Recently, we saw Hong Kong, second largest buyer of pork. This was in the weekly data a week ago. So we'll have to feel our way through that and actually just experience the decrease in pork export business. The situation in China, we believe, is critical in that it is spreading, and it's basically now impacting over three quarters of the herd, if not more than 80% of the herd. So they are restricting. They're doing what they can to try to prevent the spread of the disease, but it's just simply not successful.
So the Hong Kong buying is ultimately a Chinese destination.
Oh, we think so. We think it will move into the Chinese areas, especially in the southern provinces close to Hong Kong, but it's going to get bigger. This is going to be a situation where China is fighting this disease probably for several years, and if it cripples and hamstrings their ability to produce pork, they will become a long-term player as far as importing ever larger quantities of pork.
They are the biggest pork-consuming nation in the world.
By far, they consume more pork than the rest of the world combined. It's staggering.
That's
to
wild.
Think about. Yes.
Repeat that one more time. We don't want that to get lost on anyone.
The Chinese, they consume more pork than the rest of the world combined. And they have, as far as hog herd numbers, over half of the hog population in the world. And it is being threatened, virtually the whole herd, by this African swine fever.
They are depopulating the herd then to stop the spread?
Well, we think they are. They should be. I mean, that's how you fight it. That's how you control it. You limit shipping. You limit movement of animals. You obviously, the animals that are sick die, and you have to cull animals within a diameter or a radius to try and prevent the spread of the disease. We have no information as far as how many numbers are being called.
The spread is taking place how? Is it avian spread? Is it wild hogs in some instances? What's your best assessment of how it's moving from one operation to another over there?
We think it's by transporting the vehicles and biosecurity type of movement and shipment of animals. Once the infected animals are relocated, it's very possibly being transmitted through infected feed, and if that's the case, it's a really big mess and virtually impossible to contain, possibly through the wild boar situation. If it is in the wild hog situation, there's 30 million wild pigs in China, then that means it'll eventually spread into the neighboring countries, and then it's a regional problem. It's a really major, major problem.
We, of course, are worried about it here. We can't afford to have it pop up in the United States, can we, Dennis?
Absolutely not. We have to guard, and I know that we are moving to try and secure the borders as far as you can't allow any imported meat. That is, you can't allow tourists and travelers to bring meat in, because an infected meat could actually contribute to the introduction of the disease in this country. We have to be very vigilant about keeping it out of the North America.
If it pops up here, heaven forbid, if it occurs in the United States, if we find it here, are our safeguards to stop it good enough? There's no vaccine, right? And aren't we lacking a little bit in terms of reining in something if it pops up here?
Well, there is no vaccine, but I think we can regionalize the situation, and I think we can be quicker and better about it than probably any other country that produces pork. So you have to regionalize it, which means if it's in the southeast, possibly we could still export pork that's produced in the western area. So it'll be very critical to move swiftly, and I think our officials and the producers and the organizations are currently mapping out strategies and plans in case it does happen.
If it popped up here, would that shut off many of our export markets immediately, or would some markets say we just have to have the pork so bad, we'll take what you give us?
I think initially it would shut everything down, and then you have to start working about regionalizing it and then reopening the markets. But initially you would have to expect everything would be shut down.
So the market impact, let's talk about the continued spread in China, the continued African swine fever free market in the United States. There's nothing bearish in that horizon, is there?
There is nothing bearish about it. Quite frankly, there will not be enough pork in the world if this continues to spread in China. They have basically two sources to go to, the European Union and the United States. The third would be Brazil, and they've already forged an agreement with Brazil. But frankly, Brazil does not have the capability to even come close to meeting the demand from the Chinese, especially in the pork area. Brazil has more beef to export than they do pork. So you're talking the United States and Europe would be providing China with the pork. They will need the pork. They will not allow the price of pork to spike because that would be a major problem for the government in China.
So what's your sense on what our quarterly hogs and pigs report the end of December will show? Will it indicate that we've already started ratcheting up production here in the U.S. to meet the global demand?
Well, we've been in an expansionary mode, and we were real concerned about where our price is going this fall, especially when you're seeing 2.6 million hogs slaughtered each week. We thought we might be reaching a point where you would end the expansion.
Is that record slaughter? Are those record harvest numbers?
Yeah, these are record large numbers that we are currently processing. We were thinking maybe we were coming to the end of the expansionary phase, and then this African swine fever thing has started developing. So I think the hog and pig will show what we've been doing, very moderate expansion, which will certainly confirm record large production for next year.
Producers being yet a little bit cautious, though, and until there are other signs that we need to ramp up the expansion?
Well, that's right, because we've been facing terrific headwinds in the form of tariffs to Mexico, tariffs to China. And again, we were quite concerned about where are we going with pork prices here. If they keep going lower, you will see an industry experiencing tremendous losses, and then that will end the expansionary phase. So we're in a transition right now.
It's exciting to watch.
It is exciting to watch, especially when you look at the hog charts here of recent. We've done some pretty impressive displays of taking out resistance and moving higher, and in some cases, sharply higher.
You're telling your producers to do what? How to prepare for this?
Well, we got prepared early in that we sort of took a risk and we lifted all hedges, replaced them with puts in the December options, left the upside open, and so far that strategy is working out good. We will roll our December puts into the February puts and continue to leave everything open-ended. We are not hedging from the short side except by using put options, providing a price floor, leaving the upside open. This is a real big story.
A floor just in case there is some negative news about African swine fever, perhaps.
You bet. There's so
that could have a significant short-term impact, couldn't it, if something broke out here?
Oh, yeah. It would be pretty devastating. It's devastating on the short term. So with so much money at risk in these hog production facilities, you have to have a price floor established for part of your production anyway. But we feel like we want to leave the upside of this market totally open right now.
And we didn't even talk about the bird. Big supplies, and that benefited consumers for this Thanksgiving, didn't it?
Oh, yeah, you bet. I think the cost of the Thanksgiving Day meal is down a little bit, and of course huge poultry production and turkey production, certainly a component in that.
We appreciate it so much. Good to talk to you, Dennis. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Dennis Smith, Archer Financial Services.
And thank you for joining us here on the Saturday Morning Show. Before we leave you this morning, let's quickly run down some of the nearby states and their dates for the Farm Bureau conventions, because the Michigan Farm Bureau convention gets underway next Tuesday, November 27, continues through November 30, and that will be held in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And then there's the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Convention. That's scheduled for November 30th through December 3rd. And that will be held at Wisconsin Dells. The Illinois Farm Bureau gets underway on the 1st of December, continues until the 4th of December. That will be in downtown Chicago. And the Iowa Farm Bureau in Des Moines gets underway December 3rd, continues through December 5th. So it'll be a busy time for Farm Bureau members who'll be deciding policy, and we'll forward that on to the American Farm Bureau and at their convention in early January in New Orleans. That will be debated and discussed and formalized as the policy of the American Farm Bureau. But all of the state farm bureaus will have their opportunity to submit their ideas on what we would like to see. Oh, and here in Arizona, I'm looking forward to an annual event in December. It's the Agribusiness and Water Council taking a look at the future of Arizona agriculture. That'll be a pretty large meeting, and it happens on Monday, December 10th, and continues into December 4th. I'm looking forward to being a part of that. Well, once again, as we always do every week, thanks to Bob Ferguson for engineering the program. Thanks to you for listening, and keep your radio dial set to 720. We thank you for inviting us into your car, your home, your life, and we're grateful to be Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.